political commentator, author, professor, and academic, and blogger, Dr. Diana Sheets is on the line with us right now. Dr. Diana Sheets, welcome to News Talk, our News Radio 1020 KDKA.
It's nice talking with you, Mike.
Okay, I'm not clear on exactly what we mean by this. The show topic is decoding President-elect Obama. What does that mean?
Well, what I wanted to do when I was analyzing the election is step back and get a different perspective on what motivates people to vote for presidential candidates and why they win. And so what's very interesting is that people actually vote their worldview. And their influence, the things that help influence their worldview are words that tie into their perspective. So things like character, virtue, discipline, self-reliance, backbone, those would be conservative worldviews. Liberal ones would be empathy, nurturance, protect. And so what I really discovered in looking at Barack Obama versus John McCain is that Barack Obama fits this nurturant parent worldview, and that was what really keyed people to vote for him. And that because of the economy and because of the fears and anxiety about the economy, you have actually some people who might have traditionally voted conservative who switched because they really wanted a more nurturing government because they were afraid of their jobs. So
he fits a nurturing worldview. Whatever happened to the idea that you vote your pocketbook? No matter what you may say, you end up voting your pocketbook.
No, well, it's really interesting. What they've discovered, and the reason why the Democrats have done so poorly in previous elections, is that people don't vote rationally. They vote their emotions. Drew Weston did cognitive stuff. He did this book called The Political Brain, and it was a detailed analysis by putting wires on people's heads to see how they respond. And when they vote, what the Democrats tried to do, and actually the last several election, were talk about economic issues. And really what the Republicans were using to win elections is they were talking about the worldview of Americans, and they were getting to their emotional cord. So what was interesting in this election is Barack Obama's people were really building on a lot of the gains that had been done by the Republicans to try to tap into those emotional feelings that were going to sway voters, and they were very successful.
Well, okay, now you said something loaded and told me where you're coming from, where your bias is a few moments ago. I don't know whether it was intentional or unintentional, but what you said was that the reason Democrats haven't done very well is because voters aren't rational. And
No, that's what I said.
Yeah, and I sat back and said, what?
Well,
excuse me?
Well, believe it or not, it's really funny. When I started looking at why people vote, there are three books that have actually been put together by Democrats, and they were trying to examine why they hadn't been winning elections. And the first one was by a linguist, George Lakoff, and he's the one that came up with this idea that people vote their worldview, and that the conservative worldview is that the world is fundamentally dangerous, and that the liberal worldview is that of a nurturing parent. And
yeah, but the liberal worldview, I mean, let's put it another way,
okay.
It's the nanny government.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And so you're saying that the reason Barack Obama won is because people literally decided that what they want is a nanny government.
Especially when they're concerned about their jobs. I think if Americans had felt the economy was booming, then their more rational concerns or their emotional concerns about Barack Obama would have come to the surface. But they decided to give him the benefit of the doubt and go with a different administration because of the economy and their fears about their economic future.
You know, it's interesting that, this is totally anecdotal, but I have a very good friend who I was amazed was absolutely totally supported Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Just completely floored me because he's been in business, he's been an executive, he's a very rational guy. I don't believe, or at least in the past, he's never really expressed an interest in a big nanny government. And yet, this time around, I think he was so fed up with the Bush administration on a number of levels and was not impressed at all by John McCain. In fact, was totally turned off by Sarah Palin, which actually turned me on, by the way. I thought Sarah Palin was a great choice. That's my opinion. Well, I like her a lot, and I still like her. And yet he was totally in the tank, I guess you would say, for Barack Obama. And one of the reasons was that he was concerned about health care and about the corporatization of America and how that was kind of wrecking the economy and wrecking our way of life. And so that's exactly what you're talking about, just in other words, right?
Yes, it is. And keep in mind, even for people who are traditionally conservative and entrepreneurial, the cost of health care have become so overwhelming that it's actually been hurting businesses' ability to hire. So even conservative businessmen and women who traditionally would have voted for conservatives are now looking at the cost of hiring people and the cost of medical care, and they're saying, you know what, maybe we need to be looking at a different solution.
And so for all of those reasons, this is why Barack Obama, it wasn't because John McCain ran the worst campaign in human history.
You have a whole lot of factors. I mean, obviously, a lot of Americans really didn't like the war, and they wanted to punish the Republicans. You have a lot of libertarians who just didn't want the expense. But the overriding factor was the emotional fear. What's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to my job? If I vote for the Republicans, it's going to be business as usual. I'm scared.
All right, I'm going to take a time out here. Dr. Diana Sheets, are you with a university now?
I have an academic affiliation with the University of Illinois in Champaign, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
But I do a lot of writing on my own, so I'm tied into that community. I'm on their email. But I haven't been doing a lot of teaching lately.
Okay, and you also had a couple of novels, The Cusp of Dreams and The American Suite. And you also have a political blog, a literary and political blog, right?
Novels, I've had excerpts published, and I'm going to be working in the next year to try to see if I can get those published. But the blog, Literary Gulag, has monthly essays on politics, literature, criticism, that sort of thing.
Okay, we're going to take a time out. We'll open the phone lines for questions and comments for Dr. Diana Sheets, Decoding President-elect Barack Obama, Why He Got Elected, Why the Republicans Lost, and what she sees for the next 4 years in the Obama presidency, or should I say, what the people who voted for Barack Obama are expecting for the next 4 years. And that may be two different things, very different things. Our telephone number, 412-333-KDKA. Instant access messaging, go to kdkaradio.com. 916, Mike Pintek here on News Radio 1020, KDKA. People commenting on the virgin selling her body. Mike, the tax on virgins should be a luxury tax. Okay, that's a little off the subject here. Okay. Oh, have you heard about that, by the way?
Yes, I have.
You want to decode that one?
Oh, I don't really care. She's, anything for a spin, anything for attention these days.
$3.7 million for the virginity. I can't see how that's worth it. I don't know.
Well, it's worth it to her.
But it's worth it to somebody who's willing to pay that. Ed on the Hill, you're on News Radio 1020, KDKA.
Yes, good evening to your guests and your listeners. Ma'am, tell me, who did you vote for and why?
Okay, who did I vote for? I voted for John McCain. I voted for him because I really, I was looking at the autobiographies of both John McCain and Barack Obama. And I really felt that the autobiography stories, the John McCain story, was an external event about serving a nation, serving something larger than self. And that, for me, was very persuasive. What bothered me about the Barack Obama autobiography, it was an internal journey. And so there was no way to test his personal perceptions against an external world. And I felt it was disingenuous. So that influenced why I voted for John McCain.
But obviously the majority of voters didn't see it your way.
Absolutely.
I'm actually surprised that you're saying that you voted for John McCain. I would have thought you would have voted for, based upon your what I perceived as your bias. Obviously I'm wrong in my perception there.
Look, I'm trying to look at it dispassionately, and
okay.
And I tried to analyze what I thought were the driving influences, and it, um, but here's the interesting thing. In terms of how I think he's going to govern, I actually think Karl Rove was on Fox, I guess the O'Reilly factor the other night, and he was saying, and I think that he's got it more or less correct, that Barack Obama's going to say what I would call a liberal spin, but he's actually going to govern from the center.
I'm glad you brought this up, because we were going to go in this direction at some point anyway.
Okay.
Looking at what has transpired since the election with the transition team up to next Tuesday, I did not vote for John McCain. I did not vote for Barack Obama. I'm one of the libertarian gang.
Right.
I'm actually a political independent, or I tell people I'm a political mutt, because depending on the issue, I'll be left or I'll be right or I might be center. I voted for a libertarian because I'm fed up with both parties.
Right.
And could not pull the lever for a guy that I see as very liberal and a socialist, Barack Obama. Couldn't pull the lever for John McCain because, to me, his backstory is great, as you pointed out. And I think his life is a story of service to the country. But when the chips were down and this bailout bill was hanging, he comes back to Washington and says, I'm suspending my campaign and I'm going to work on this. And he ends up not only signing on to it, but helping to make it even bigger than ever. And this is not what, to me, what a conservative does. And it just seemed to me that he turned his back on all of his principles at that. And that one moment, that was a defining moment for me. There was no way I could vote for him after that. And so that's where I came from on that.
Yeah,
but I look at Barack Obama, and I tell people that you know, just love Barack Obama. They were happy to, they couldn't wait to get into that voting booth to pull that lever.
Right.
And I say to them, you know what? You should be scared to death of this statement. And they said, what? Barack Obama right now is doing stuff that I think is just great.
Yep.
And
yep.
I said, you should think about that.
Yep.
And so this is what I'm seeing. I think if Karl Rove said that, I think he's absolutely right.
Yep.
I think what's happened here is that Obama ran left, and then during the campaign, he still was left. But now, since he's won the election, he realizes, he gets it, that he's going to have to move to the center in order to keep the coalition alive here.
Oh, absolutely. And he's going to need the support of Republicans to pass the legislation he wants, even though obviously the Democrats have a majority. He knows that, and he's running for 8 years, and he knows that the American population really is sitting in the middle in terms of politics.
And that's still true.
Yep. And it hasn't changed, and he knows that.
Is it right? Is it a little right of center, or is it now left of center?
Oh, I think it's hard to say. I mean, it moves left because of fears about jobs, but instinctively, it's right of center.
Okay. So do the Democrats like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid understand that?
Oh, no. Oh, no. They are going to be screaming what I would call hard left issues. But you have to realize the wonderful thing about Barack Obama is, because he's the first African-American president, everyone is going to give him on the far left a lot of latitude. And he's doing constantly things to try to walk this very strange divide. So, for instance, at the inauguration, he has one minister who's gay for one part of it, and he'll have a conservative minister giving the invocation for another part of the inauguration. So, I mean, it's almost hard to imagine anyone else being able to get away with that, but he is.
Yeah, but I think his supporters on the left are already starting to get a little annoyed and antsy and restless because of not just because of the initial appointment of Reverend Rick Warren,
right,
as the invocation pastor, but also because he's keeping Bob Gates as,
yep,
the defense secretary.
Yep.
He's backed away from this immediate pullout of Iraq.
Yep.
Although he said he's going to close down Guantanamo. He hasn't set a date certain on that, and he knows damn well he can't just release those people down there to the general population of the United States. So they got to figure out what to do with them, so he can't move quickly on that. So it seems to me that in the next 4 years, his biggest problems are going to be on the left. Would you agree?
I don't know.
I mean, if he continues in this centrist fashion that he seems to be embarking on at this moment, he's going to have trouble from the left.
Well, eventually he'll have trouble. But if the economy recovers, if Americans are perceiving that he's actually trying to do right by them, again, this is where emotions really come into play. Sure, there's the hard left that's going to be pushing for things, but he will do, in my mind, a number of token gestures to make them feel good. Now, if the economy doesn't improve, if he doesn't meet some of the critical needs, if there are certain areas that he fails dramatically for them, yes, absolutely, they'll fight him to the core. But I think he's going to try to walk this line, and then the question is, Can he make the economy kick in? Can he make it turn around?
Dr. Diana Sheets is our guest. She's from the University of Illinois. She's a research scholar in the English and History departments. She is also the operator and owner and writer of the political blog LiteraryGulag.com. And we'd love to take your questions. If you've got some comments or questions for her, you can get them in at 412-333-KDKA. The subject is decoding President Barack Obama and his administration, the expectations of the people who voted for him, and the realities, the likely realities. And if you want to send a comment or a question, you can do it by going to KDKARadio.com and going to our instant access feature on our webpage there. Our telephone number again, 412-333-KDKA. JT from The Hill, you're on News Radio 1020 KDKA.
Good evening, Mike, and to your guest. Ma'am, did I understand you to say that you felt that McCain was more, let me use the word, nationalist?
Did you say nationalist?
Yes.
No, I didn't say that.
No, she didn't say that.
Okay, well, would you say what you said about McCain, why you voted for him, please?
I voted for him because of his worldview, because of the fact that he fought in service to his country, because of issues larger than self. And his autobiography, Faith of My Fathers, was an external story about serving in the nation.
All right, I'm going to ask you, just hold on there, because I need to take our break here for the news. So just hang loose. We'll continue this discussion in a moment. Mike Pinsek here, along with Dr. Diana Sheets, a political commentator, author, novelist, and blogger, political blogger, LiteraryGulag.com. She's with the University of Illinois. JT, I'm going to give you let you make your point here, okay? So make your point and then let her respond.
All right. I think, Dr. Chief, that President-elect Obama is so much more representative of the world than McCain would ever hope to be. He may turn out to be the last president this country ever has, but I think currently, and I do agree with you, that if he stays to the center in his governing the country, he'll do well. But I do want you to know that he is more representative of the world than McCain could ever be. I'll hang up. Listen to you.
All right. Well, okay. Thank you for the call. I don't think that's what you said. He's not representative of the world. You were talking about the worldview.
Right.
And I would also like to point out that I recall JT in my first career here at KDKA, when Bill Clinton was elected, I think JT once said that he thought Bill Clinton was going to be the last president we had in this country. So I've heard this prediction from him before.
Well, I think Obama's going to do some very interesting things, and I think he's a very smart guy, and the things that I really like about, I think the people he's been putting together to form the cabinet are really, overall, some amazing choices.
Wait a minute. You mean like that tax cheat for U.S. Treasury Secretary Geithner? I mean, this guy's he's a tax cheat. He's supposed to head the Treasury Department where you send your tax money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's reprehensible, and Obama gives him a pass and says, oh, it was an innocent mistake. $34,000 he owed. And you're going to tell us that it was an innocent mistake? It was not an innocent mistake. He knew exactly what he's doing.
No, I'm not going to tell you it was an innocent mistake, but I will tell you that he's very qualified to be head of Treasury. I think that's a terrible mistake.
I don't think he's qualified. I don't think he's qualified because he's a tax cheat. He can't resign because he hasn't been approved, but he should step away. He should, Obama should kick him out of there.
Right, from what I read recently, now I can't, who can tell, but my understanding is they felt that the economic issues were so important that he's been in the center of so much of this, they're very reticent to turn him away.
They can find, there are other guys out there who would be just as good.
There probably are,
and this is just the wrong message. This just once again, see, this is This was one of the missteps, I think, already before he even takes office. He's got this scandal now, and this is like a huge mistake on Obama's part to have this guy as Treasury Secretary. I think this is an abomination. That's me, but you know, I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that.
Well, it's very, very wrong, and it's hard to understand how somebody who spent his whole career basically leading up to this job could have such poor judgment.
And then you got Governor Richardson from Nevada. He had to, or New Mexico. He had to drop out because he's got a pay for play scandal in his background. And you got God only knows what was going on between the Obama people and Blagojevich, because they pulled the plug on that investigation early. Why did they do that before they could even get an indictment? Now they're asking, the U.S. attorney's asking for more time to get an indictment. Well, why'd you pull the plug in the investigation in the first place?
Well, they did it very simply because they didn't want him to be able to appoint a senator that had been paid for.
Yeah, but why, you know what, at that point, then you indict everybody. and I think they pulled the plug on this because it was, I think Barack Obama's people were about to make some sort of a deal.
Oh, no.
Okay. Oh, I believe that. I'm serious.
Well,
I don't know whether Barack Obama knew anything about it personally, and I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I think some of his people were on the verge of cutting a deal to buy that Senate seat, and that's why they pulled the plug, because they didn't want the embarrassment for the Obama people.
Oh, no. You know, Barack Obama actually had a very difficult... You know, I'm from Illinois, and I've been watching this very closely.
Well, that's why I'm going after you on this, because I've mentioned several times you are affiliated with the University of Illinois,
right,
so you should know.
I'm like the only conservative at the University
of
Illinois.
Okay.
So he actually did not have a good relationship with Govoyevich, he is not from, you know, from the standpoint of the University of Illinois, he's been a terrible governor. He's absolutely destroyed our university, and he's very, very corrupt, and I can't wait to have him go to jail. But whether he'll get to jail, whether they'll actually have enough to indict and send him to jail, is very questionable. But I think the decision, they simply did not want to have a senator who was appointed based on money, and I think that, you know, that would have been Jesse Jackson Jr. And I actually think Barack Obama is very, very clean on this. And I'll tell you who has a much closer association with him is Chief of Staff.
Rahm Emanuel. Well, okay. Yeah. Wait a minute. Let me clarify what I'm saying here, just for the record. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So that I think I've made myself clear, but maybe not. I want to clarify this. I don't think Barack Obama personally was involved in making a deal with or trying to make a deal to get whoever he wanted as his replacement in the Senate and get paying off Blagojevich or making any promises. I don't think Barack Obama personally had anything to do with that, because Blagojevich is on tape supposedly saying that, actually using some foul language to refer to Barack Obama personally. But I'm talking about Barack Obama's people, like Rahm Emanuel.
The person who has the closest ties to Blagojevich is Rahm Emanuel.
I think that Rahm Emanuel or somebody connected with him, or in some way, shape, or form with the Barack Obama transition team, was about to make a deal, that's why they pulled the plug, because they didn't want this embarrassment.
You know, you may be, I would absolutely say without a doubt that is not true.
Okay,
now,
okay, I hope I'm wrong.
I will tell you that there was, you know, look, Rahm Emanuel was doing a lot of politicking in Chicago, and he had a lot of association with him. And so he has, you know, if you dig hard enough, you'll see some associations there, but you're not going to see it with Barack Obama.
Okay, all right.
They had a very difficult relationship.
All right. Well, let me,
I guess one thing that your listeners may not know is that Govoyevich was, when he came in as governor, he expected to be the next Democratic president. He thought he would be groomed by the Chicago Party machine to run. And basically, in my opinion, he was too stupid. And so when Barack Obama came along, he became, to use the fair-haired child. And the Chicago machine went behind him, and he got the appointment. And the desperate measures that Blagojevich did were stemmed out of anger that, you know, he was being entirely bypassed and he was not a player.
All right. Well, you're in Illinois and I'm not. I'm just looking at it from my prism here, and that's
how
I see. Okay, I hope you're right. I hope I'm wrong. How's that?
Yep. Okay.
But let's take some more calls here. We've got Susan from Squirrel Hill on News Radio 1020, KDKA.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment to the doctor there about why she voted for John McCain.
Mm-hmm.
Thought that was very intriguing. I didn't feel that he had any ideas on how to fix the economy. He showed no leadership in his debates. I thought they were a debacle. And he didn't even pick the vice president, presidential candidate that he truly wanted. I mean, everybody at this point knows that he didn't want Sarah Palin. So what kind of leadership does that show our country when you can't even pick the vice president that you truly want? You went so far right.
Well, who do you think that he wanted?
I think he probably wanted Lieberman.
I think he probably wanted Tom Ridge.
Tom Ridge. But they were pro-choice, and he couldn't go that way.
Yeah.
So when you picked Sarah Palin, you alienated how many people? You went so far right.
Well, but if you'd have taken Tom Ridge,
did Obama pick the person he wanted? I don't think so at all.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think he absolutely was, you know, he picked the person that defensively would give him the best strategic position, and I think...
That's what most presidents do. Presidential candidates do. They pick a vice presidential candidate that they think politically can help them win the election. They don't really care what that vice president does once they're in office. All they want to do is win the office, right?
Yes, and it's very important to remember that up until the economy tanked, John McCain was actually head-to-head with Barack Obama.
And after he picked Sarah Palin as his VP candidate, he got a huge bump.
Absolutely.
And for a time, if I'm not mistaken, there was a very brief period of time where he was maybe a couple of points ahead.
Yep.
But still within the margin of error, but he was a little ahead at one point and got that bump after the convention. And Sarah Palin really appealed to the right wing that has of the Republican Party that was just totally lukewarm at best over John McCain.
Absolutely, and you know, you can say it was a very calculated choice, but in a sense, it was realizing that politics is a gamble; it's a poker game.
And that's exactly and your point about Joe Biden is exactly the same thing on the other side. You're absolutely right. Dr. Diana Sheets is with us. She's a political commentator, a novelist, author. She's a blogger on the literarygulag.com. She's affiliated with she's a research scholar at the English and History Departments at the University of Illinois, among her achievements. And she's with us tonight to decode the president-elect of Barack Obama, his campaign, and what we may see in the next 4 years. What did you think of his choice of Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State?
I'm actually very pleased with her choice.
So was I. Of all the choices that he could have made, I thought that was a good one.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent one. And I was thrilled that Robert Gates is being kept on. And, you know, there's some... Arne Duncan for Department of Education is actually a good choice. And I think some of the things they're talking about to try to address education disadvantages is actually a good plan. So I don't know. I think he's been making some very smart choices. And, you know, I don't agree with all of them. And I personally wasn't too happy with Leon Panetta's choice, you know, to be the head of the CIA. But
he knows nothing about intelligence.
Right, right. He knows nothing.
Why would Barack Obama do that?
Oh, I think that was one of the gestures to the left.
And
it was a way of saying we're going to punish the CIA for having done things that are beyond the bounds and scope of what we want, and the way to ensure that it doesn't happen under my watch is to bring in someone outside the CIA.
So this is all about the waterboarding issue.
Oh, absolutely.
At base. Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, we're going to take some time out. Can you stick around?
Sure.
And we've got Joanne from Point Breeze on News Radio 1020, KDKA. Hi.
Hello to you and your guests.
Yes.
State Mayor, too, and a quick question.
Right.
Ma'am, do you think that if Obama had run on the Republican ticket, the Republicans would have been a happy campers?
I don't know that he would have ever run on the Republican ticket.
How could somebody that far left even become a Republican?
But he certainly made it a challenge for the Republican Party to bring other prominent leaders who are African American or Hispanic or, of a range of ethnicities into their camp. He's put a challenge right in front of them if they want to, you know, get the attention of many, many Americans.
Well, I've said this before, but for the record, he ran a masterful campaign.
Oh, he did.
Absolutely. And McCain ran a very lousy campaign.
Yes,
I mean, would you concede that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. What did you think? Did I ask you what you thought of Sarah Palin?
Oh, I think she was an ingenious choice. I think for exactly what you said, I think that the hardcore conservatives were not happy with John McCain, and I think they felt that they've been waiting and campaigning and representing the party for a long time and that the party had not been responding to them, and I think Sarah Palin met a lot of those needs. And she has media experience. She knows how to work media. She knew how to emotionally engage that part of the Republican base.
But why was she so... She came off so poorly, particularly in that Katie Couric interview.
Yes.
and some other interview. I mean, she just was an awful performance. And ended up looking like a buffoon in some cases.
Oh, she did, and that hurt her very badly. But, you know, they pointed out that when George W. Bush was preparing to run, they had similar concerns about him, and they really managed him much better, because I don't think he's really a naturally engaging speaker in front of the audience. But all I can tell you is there are some limitations to her. She needs more work on policy issues and on a lot of the political savvy detail stuff. But what she knows how to do is emotionally connect to the voters. And I think it was unfortunate she didn't really have a lot of time to ramp up, to be prepared for what would be, you know, really an attack by the left at her, you know, at her appointment as a potential vice presidential candidate.
Okay, those on the left and the mainstream liberal media have painted her as an idiot, as a stupid person,
yep.
as a
yep.
backwoods person,
yep.
Backward, a little more than trailer trash. They have trashed her family. And if they believed all of that stuff, why are they continuing to attack her now that the election's over? I'm not understanding that.
Yeah, I actually have an essay called The Sarah Palin Effect that's on my blog. And my PhD thesis years ago was on the triumph of conservatism in Britain. So I analyzed her with respect to Britain, and I really talked about how actually there's a much better tradition of conservatives supporting strong women candidates than Democrats. So I thought she was a very interesting example that was very much in the line with Margaret Thatcher. But they're very worried about her, and that's why they've continued
to... The left is worried about
yes.
her.
Yes, yes.
So really, they don't believe this tripe about her being stupid, about her being essentially an empty vessel.
Well, I think, again, if you go back to the liberal argument, the Drew Weston argument, the emotional brain... What they're very afraid of is that Americans will tap into her for emotional reasons, and that what they don't want is what the Democrats think should be an appropriate candidate, and they're worried about her. Look, she's very photogenic. She knows how to appeal to the emotional desires of a significant portion of the American public, and in a way, unfortunately, that John McCain did not.
What you're describing, though, is also the emotional tapping into the American psyche that Barack Obama did. Isn't that what you
yes.
just said earlier in this
yes.
hour?
Exactly. But you
Whoa.
See, what happened was he was, you know, young, engaging, you know, sexy. And so this, you know, it's a poker game. And so they said, we need someone that's going to represent the mainstream of the Republican Party who's young and engaging. And we'll show them that we're an agent of change. We'll pick a woman who's very dynamic. And let me tell you, the Democrats were very worried about that.
Well, I think you're right, and until the economy went into the tank.
Right, and of course, until they managed to trash her on television, and the interesting thing is they didn't entirely succeed.
They didn't succeed.
She came back, and she fought hard, and the camera loved her, and there's a significant portion of the American people who really passionately believed in her.
Eddie in downtown Pittsburgh, you are on News Radio 1020 KDK with Mike Pinsek and Dr. Diana Sheets.
Well, thanks a lot, Mike. I somewhat agree with this gal here, but it was the economy that changed there.
Absolutely. Huh? We're in total agreement.
She said she agrees with you, Eddie.
Well, I'm saying that, yeah, when the economy changed there was not much chance. Too bad that Mrs. Palin had a rotten man at the top of the ticket. I'm a Ron Paul man, so let me just say this, that Barack Obama was also treated differently, Diane. When he mentioned 57 states, that wasn't harped upon by the media types there and the big media, not even Fox. They made some mention of it. But the fact is, he made one of the stupidest statements I heard a politician ever made when he was down talking to La Raza, down in Los Angeles. He was asked about illegal aliens coming in, and he says, you know, you hear about all these illegal aliens from south of the border. What about the ones coming in from Ireland and Poland?
Did he actually say that?
He said that. It was on ABC. It's what? ABC Radio News.
I totally was ignorant of that. I never heard that. That didn't get any play at all.
No. Yeah, there you go. And you see, where was Fox? They should have played that a bit more. I think there was some skullduggery behind the scenes going on here. Mike, do you read Paul Craig Roberts?
No.
You know who I'm talking about?
No.
The former Wall Street editor, national syndicated columnist, they're trying to get rid of his columns. Just like they tried to get rid of Ron Paul. They don't want that common sense out there when it comes to the economy. And that was the point I have for you, Diane.
Okay.
Maybe people like you would not waste so much time with these people like maybe even what the Republicans are trying to do here. Look, they're schmoozing. You've got William Crystal out there having dinner with Barack Obama. And these neocons, I'm telling you, they infiltrated and took over and destroyed the Republican Party. And that's what us Ron Paul supporters were trying to do, see if we had any chance of reworking the Republican Party in any way. Not so. Those people are power brokers. They're internationalists. You watch. That's why you're seeing Pat Robertson get behind Obama, because Obama is a weak man. They've got so much on him, even the birth certificate question. They can manipulate him into carrying on this war in a way a Republican couldn't.
Well, you were making sense a moment ago, and now you've stepped into the conspiracy psychosis.
So we can't bring up things. Why doesn't he show his birth certificate, Mike? Why doesn't he do it? And can I ask you one last question?
I don't know, Eddie, but it's all a moot point now because the Supreme Court refused to even hear that case.
He's illegal. He's illegal. And I'm saying that, Mike, have you ever read the American Free Press?
No, Eddie, I haven't.
Well,
I don't
Phil
even
Berg,
know. Where would I get the American Free Press?
Go to AmericanFreePress.net. Phil Berg had a full story in there.
Phil Berg hasn't even bothered to get back to me, by the way, after I gave him airtime last week. And he hasn't even bothered to answer my email. I had to go find this out myself. By the way, do you have any thoughts on this issue of the Barack Obama naturalized citizen thing? You've seen that on the internet. I know you're aware of it.
I'm aware of it. I think it's an irrelevant issue.
Well, I mean, do you think there's any substance whatsoever to it?
I don't know. I tend to doubt it.
Well, the Supreme Court last Friday was going to decide whether they were going to hear the case or not. And they chose not to.
Right.
And that's what Eddie was talking about. Eddie, thanks for the call. I need to move on here. Have you heard of the American Free Press? I don't know what that is.
No, I haven't.
I have not either. Okay, so I'll take a look at that later. What about the what about his other point though about the neocons basically ending up controlling the Republican Party? See, I look at the Republican Party as the Republican Party has left me, not the other way around. I'm serious.
Well, I think the Republican Party has several different factions. It has what I called an old-fashioned conservative, which has almost entirely disappeared from the party. I mean, all of them in the Northeast were entirely thrown out of office, which were people who believed in minimum government and just trying to live in a responsible way. And then there's the libertarian faction, and then there's the neocons. I'm more sympathetic to the neocon position than most people.
But the neocon position is what got us into the Iraq War.
Yes, it did.
Oh, so you're sympathetic to that?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you're really out of the mainstream of America
yes,
right now.
Yes, I am. I know.
Right.
But I think here's what it really comes down to is I really think you had to have a strong response after 9/11.
I think, looking back, I'm out of time here, but I think looking backwards now, if we had it to do all over again, I really, really wish we wouldn't have gone into Iraq.
Many Americans agree with you.
Yeah. Well, this has been interesting, Dr. Diana Sheets. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was really a pleasure to talk with you this evening, Mike.
LiteraryGulag.com is her blog, and she is a scholar at the University of Illinois as well. She's written two novels, The Cusp of Dreams and American Sweet, Dr. Diana Sheets.